Welcome to Politics Done Right on KPFT. I am your host, Egberto Williams. This is the progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. Give me a call at 713-526-5738. That is 713-526-KPFT. Remember, you can also send me a tweet to EGBERTOWILLIES. That is at Egberto Williams. Let us engage. It is politics done right.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, and along drive-in is Roxy. How you doing, Roxy?
Doing well, Egberto. How are you?
Am I so glad to see you this week, Roxy?
I missed you too, Egberto.
Oh, I mean, you just left me on a week ago. I mean, that was tough.
I'm so sorry. I promise I will try my hardest to not ever make it happen so quickly as it did last week.
Oh, right. Anyhow, you know, folks, for all of those who are looking at the blog post and so forth, we made a little change. And Terry, I'm going to be coming to you after the blog post, but we are actually honored today to have Nico Letsas, because Nico Letsas, you know, he was in Kingwood today. You know what is great to see, folks? And I just asked Nico to come in here because he was out there in Kingwood block walking. He was out there in Kingwood telling folks that he wanted to get elected. I hadn't seen that in a long time. Then I also found out that Nico Letsas is the youngest ever.
Currently in the country.
The youngest person running for federal office in the country at this time. It's federal office, correct?
Yes, sir. 25. You have to be 25. I got the deadline by a week.
Well, good. You did it, buddy. But look, one of the reasons I asked you to be on the show, and I need to go with my blog post before I get to you specifically, but I was completely impressed to see a candidate out there stumping to win an election, to talk to people and actually engage. I think that is something that has been missing for a very, very long time.
Thank you.
You know, so I am glad to see that. So, Roxy, how was your day?
It was a good Monday.
It was a good
Monday. How was yours?
Well, I'm trying to make it, Roxy. I'm trying to make it. It was a very long day, but you know how that goes. You try to make it as best as you can. But you know, folks, you know, corporations want big government. Americans want government that works. That's not what you hear, but that's the truth. You know, it was just a matter of time. One has to wonder, what took so long? There was a time when Republicans would clobber Democrats on social issues, fiscal issues, religious issues. You know, they've done it even through America. Has never really been, you know, even though America was really never a centrist country, they always try to make it look that way. But, you know, the plutocracy for many years engineered that center-right myth. You know, they did it by fusing several groups that were not natural allies. They created the liberal that was anathema to God, guns, and gay hate, you know? And with that, they controlled us all using what? Not little government that they asked for, but big government. Not big government for Americans, but big government for themselves. You know, folks, I wrote a blog piece, and this wasn't the blog piece that I intended to do today, but after reading an item in the New York Times and watching some stuff on the news today, as usual, I got inspired, I got mad, and I just started writing. I threw the show out. And then, of course, I then find Nico, and Nico made another change to the show. But I want to read this blog piece, then I'm going to go to a couple of calls, and then we're going to get Nico in here. So let's get busy, folks. Let's get busy.
It's time for the weekly blog post.
Well, as you know, I kind of gave it away because I call it corporations want big government. Americans want government that works. Right, Nico? Isn't that what we want? Government that works?
Effective government.
That's what we're looking for. Anyway, here it goes. There is a myth that Democrats and Republicans have allowed themselves to believe. Here is how they figure it. Since 1992, at any given time, 17% and 23% of Americans said they were liberals. Between 34% and 43% said they were moderate. Between 36% and 38% said they were conservative. The charlatans, looking at those numbers, figured that the number of moderate citizens plus the number of conservative citizens are greater than the number of moderate citizens plus liberal citizens. As such, they declared America a center-right country. In other words, a country leaning conservative. This construct was necessary to secure the roots of polarization. A huge tree of dysfunction could then be spliced into those roots, but I digress. One must remember that Americans are the ones who personally decides what liberal, moderate, or conservative mean. The corporate media over the last few decades have been successful in coercing into demonize the liberal label. As such, many moderates that would otherwise say they were liberal simply do not. One should remember that liberal, moderate, and conservative in the past had little to do with parties. There has always been liberal Democrats, conservative Democrats, and moderate Democrats. There has always been liberal Republicans, conservative Republicans, and moderate Republicans. One must remember that liberal values got women the right to vote. Liberal values ended slavery. Liberal values ensured a livable 40-hour week. Liberal values gave us a minimum wage. Liberal values gave Americans a voice over the American plutocracy, the American corporatocracy. One must remember that in the 1964 Civil Rights Act was one of the greatest liberal achievements. It required the support of Republicans. While more Democrats voted for the bill than Republicans, a larger percentage of Republicans voted for the act. This, of course, is because in 1964 there were many more Democrats in both chambers of Congress. That could not stand. It is too difficult for a plutocracy, a corporatocracy, to maintain control of a more educated population that has the ability of nuance. It is easier to have a fight between parties. It is easier to have a fight between good and evil. It becomes necessary to purge. The Democrats that voted against the 1964 Civil Rights Act were mostly from the South. President Johnson knew that doing the right thing would have cost him and his party the South for at least a generation. President Nixon's use of the Southern strategy to take advantage of an increased polarization meant a Republican Party that had its center of gravity in the South. Many of those Southern Republicans switched parties to become Southern Democrats. Then came the moral majority. And by the way, I said that the other way around, but you know what I meant. Then came the moral majority. Of course, it really was simply a vocal and loud minority that fused values to the Republican Party that had little to do with real human values. They simply became the coercion arm of the plutocracy on the Republican side, while the Blue Dog Democrat provided the cover on the pseudo-left. The problem has always been, however, that America post-World War II was never a conservative country. It was and is a big government liberal country. No one loves the bigness of the government more than the plutocracy. Do not be fooled into the small government tenet the right always speak about. Why is it that the plutocracy wants big government? It is rather simple. Big government extracts. It is one central entity from which the plutocracy, through the control of policy, can spend our tax dollars to enrich themselves. The propensity for war is a classic example. As our wars are winding down, those watching the coffers of many corporations are concerned. The plutocracy does not want to spend its resources investing in Americans, in human capital. They want a handout. How to get that handout? Create another war. The rather dumb ISIS-ISIL terrorists fell into the American plutocracy's trap. ISIS-ISIL is not, I repeat, ISIS-ISIL is not a match for the weakest of the NATO countries. Yet though, through the media, they have become the incarnation of a fuse, David and Goliath. And in becoming Mr. David Goliath, the American plutocracy is ready to extract our tax dollars to build more bombs. While the left and the right fight about small government versus big government, the plutocracy simply grow the parts of government that they need to increase their wealth as they pilfer us all. All Americans want is government that works. All we get is big government transferring our wealth to a distinct few in the American plutocracy. And with that, that is the word. Before I get to Nico, Terry, tell me what you think.
Hey, Gordo, just a programming note. You didn't tell us what office Nico's was running for.
That is so bad of me. Nico, why don't you tell him?
Sure. I'm running for the 2nd Congressional District here in Texas for U.S. Congress. Currently, the incumbent is Mr. Lloyd Ted Poe.
Okay. Well, great. Well, I wish you the best. Certainly, Ted Poe's never been a favorite of mine. Secondly, the faux center-right narrative is something that's been proffered in this country really from the middle 70s on. And it's supported by the same people who vote counter to their economic interests, because they're the ones who believe the center-right narrative, and they're the low-information, low-IQ, low-education voters that are so easily manipulated by those people.
That is so true. That is one of the reasons, you know, like I said, I changed up exactly what I was talking about today, because I think this was present based on the information that, or based on the kind of the news cycle that we had this time around. But, you know, folks, there's one thing that I was supposed to do when I started this show, and to tell you guys that it's a call-in show, and not only that it's a call-in show, that you should be calling 713-526-5738. Another way of saying that, 713-526-KPFT, and Roxy says it this way.
713-JAM-KPFT.
So folks, don't forget to give us a call. You have Nico Letzas with us, who knows all there is to know about what government needs to be. Right, Nico?
That's a lot of it. I don't want to claim omniscient knowledge, but yeah, I know.
Actually,
I'm confident in my ability there.
I want, before we go any further, Nico, I'd like you to tell folks your website, because I've been doing quite a bit of reading on that site, and just from a civics point of view of how government works and how government should work, it is one of the kinds of websites that you want to go to just to simply see. As a civic example, so why don't you tell them, Nico?
My website is my name, nicoletsos.com. And what I've done on my website is something I would hope, you know, all candidates would do. I clearly lay out my position on about 20 issues, you know, pretty briefly. I say what the problem is, what I would do to address that if I'm elected. And then I have a part of my website, which is nicoletsos.com, where I've written, you know, pretty lengthy articles on, you know, the key issues of the day, where I really lay out my case on how I would deserve to represent the 2nd District.
That is actually very important. Now, I want to go back to the blog post that I wrote, Terry, and I hope are you still here with me, Terry?
Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to go over when I brought in the plutocracy bit in the whole beginning. Right now, if we take a look at candidates running, let's say, let's look at Nico's race. He's running against a Ted Poe. Okay. One of the reasons I brought him here is as a perfect example of what one of the ills in our system. We all know that. And this is news. This isn't partisan news. And specifically, this is actually news. We actually know that Ted Poe has declared himself a Tea Party candidate. We also know that Ted Poe has been an anti-immigration candidate. We also know that Ted Poe has laid out and have been one of the biggest obstructionists in Congress, just based on the information that you can watch on YouTube and on C-SPAN. There is an interesting thing that occurred, however, Mr. Nikos, and that was you spent some time with Ted Poe. Why don't you explain to me that meeting or whatever that was, and explain to the audience what you thought about the conversation that actually occurred, but reference that to reality.
Sure. Well, most candidates in the greater Houston area are invited by the Houston Chronicle to come in for an endorsement meeting. So that's where the interaction happened. It was probably, I would say, the longest time I spent with Poe in the race so far. As you would imagine, he doesn't do too many town halls or anything like that. He's done about 2 in the last year. So he doesn't make himself very accessible. But yeah, I spent an hour with him, and we talked about a variety of things. The Chronicle wanted to get our opinion on Houston, issues that matter to Houston, the state, and then the nation. And it was just really remarkable for me to see a congressman that, like you said, is openly a Tea Partier, openly very ideological, doesn't come to the middle ground for a lot of things, has a black and white perspective of how a lot of things work. And for him, you know, behind closed doors to act like a statesman, like he's gone to D.C. for 10 years and has accomplished great things. And for him to pretend he has a legacy to defend, I mean, this is the most unproductive, polarized Congress we have ever had. And quite frankly, all of them should be thrown out, Republican and Democrat alike, because they're part of this institution. And just, you know, going through the conversation, at one point we were talking about the Port of Houston and how it needs to be expanded. You know, the Panama Canal is being expanded. Shipping is booming. And 50% of the Houston economy, believe it or not, in one way or another, is tied to the port. So it's very important to get that infrastructure project going. And he was talking about how in Congress he's, you know, working all the time to get the EPA to get behind the port project. Now, 90% of the time, if Poe, I'd venture to guess, if Poe is mentioning the EPA, he's talking about it to abolish it. I mean, this is a group that doesn't even publicly believe that organization should exist. And then here he is saying, well, the EPA needs to be involved because, you know, the port has huge environmental ramifications. So I'm trying to get it involved, but it's very hesitant. Why is that? You know, I wish the EPA would do a better job. That's what he's saying on the one hand.
I want to stop you right there because this is important. You are saying that this conversation occurred at the editorial board for the Chronicle.
Yes.
Now, is this information going to be released to the public, yes or no?
I mean, it depends how they write it up. I mean, I were to guess, because, I mean, it was a one-hour conversation, so...
But do we only see a write-up, or do we see more? Do we get to listen to the actual interview?
Oh, you won't be able to listen to it. But, I mean, they'll write up, you know, in their endorsement, why, one way or the other.
Now, you said that he looked completely... Were you trying to say something, Roxy? Okay. You said he looked completely, or he said things completely anathema to what he actually represents. We started with the Port of Houston, the mm-hmm. environmental issues or whatever. What I would like to get out of you is a list of these items as you see them. Now, I imagine that you have tried to get a debate with Ted Poe, have you?
Through PBS.
Because we've sent emails to Ted Poe as well with the attempt to get, you know, to get a... Get information as well, of course, to no avail. So tell me, first of all, you have tried to get him in an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Now, secondly, what are these items that we can go down line for line that you think is completely different than what his public persona to his behind the doors persona?
Sure. I mean, I mean, most congressmen, when you listen to them and they're talking about wanting to get results, they champion bipartisanship. They make a point of saying, oh, I want to reach across the aisle, because they know in their heart of hearts that is the only way you'll get things done.
Right.
I mean, the Constitution, basically the subtitle could be, let's make a deal. Mm-hmm. And that's how our government's made to work. So, I mean, in this endorsement meeting, he was talking about, he actually called himself the most bipartisan member of Congress. I mean, that is as absurd as it gets, because he's openly a member of the Tea Party caucus, which is the most ideological part of Congress. I mean, in most of their comments, President Obama is the worst president ever. He's weakening the country by every single one of his actions. If Obama comes out for, you know, any policy, they'll go against it just because of that. And I mean, you know, bipartisanship is a huge thing for immigration. What's funny is before this flare-up in the summer, Poe had really softened on immigration to the mm-hmm. point where he was for the DREAM Act, although he had voted against it in 2010. And now once again, because the public is, the polls, at least the polls he looks at, I bet, are very anti-immigrant, he's once again become anti-immigrant. Although, you know, with the editorial board, who are moderates mostly, and, you know, kind of look at the issue with nuance, like you mentioned, is necessary, you know, they're pro-immigration. And with them, he's pro-immigration. But if you put him in front of his core, he's going to bash, you know, immigrants.
But I think you're saying if you put him in front of his core, but what does his record say In other words, that's important. I mean, in other words, we really don't care what he says in front of the people. We really don't care what he says behind closed doors. The only thing that you can judge a congressperson by is what's on the record.
Right.
So what's on his record
Absolutely.
Relative to immigration?
He voted against the DREAM Act in 2010. And really, that's the only opportunity he had, because in the House, they haven't even let immigration bills come to a vote. As you know, they've rigged plenary time for the Senate immigration bill, which was passed in 2013. That hasn't even gotten a vote. So, I mean, we don't necessarily have a record for him except, you know, those votes against the DREAM Act. And I want to say, as far as that goes, he's made public remarks in 2013. As you remember, when Romney lost, all the Republicans panicked and said that, you know, we need to get immigration reform done, because if we don't, we'll lose a generation of the Hispanic vote. And all Republicans in 2013, including Poe, were talking about, we're going to commit to this, we're going to get it done. And they didn't. I mean, the fact that there is not a record is almost as much of an indictment, even if he had voted one way or another, because the fact that he hasn't made this a cause of his to push it, to pressure his Republican leadership to bring it to a vote, I mean, that's a pretty pretty big mark against
him. Now, I'm
curious.
This is something that you should know. What's the demographic breakdown of your district?
What do you mean? Like
Latinos, et cetera.
It's a majority white district, so mm-hmm. it really mirrors what the country used to be. Mm-hmm. But it's a new district. It's only in 2012. That's the one election it's had. So, I mean, I would say it's about 20%, 50% around white, mm-hmm. 20 to 30% Hispanic, 10% or so African American. And the remainder, it's in Spring Branch, there's quite a few Asian Americans, Montrose as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, roughly that would be the breakdown.
Now, is that when they did that breakdown, is that the demographic breakdown of the district, or is that the voting demographics of the district?
Well, that's a good, very good question. The voting demographics would be even more white, because, mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, the older the group is, the more mm-hmm. likely they are to vote. So whites are proportionally older than the rest of the group.
So do you think he's somehow then playing to that demographic, or because I mean I don't know that that's necessarily a smart. I mean I understand that he may have name recognition in the district. But do you think that is something that will continue to play 2014?
Well, of course he's playing to his demographic. I mean, you know, a lot of voters are very dissatisfied with government. So for him to be anti-government in a way, even though he's government, appeals to them. For him to say, you know, to bash things like the EPA in public, which, you know, that's one of the Republicans' favorite punching bag and has mm-hmm. been for a very long time. That plays well with this crowd that also views government as wasteful and just taxing and doesn't do anything
but
for them.
But I want to push back on that. You said you somehow would make the – one of the things that I've constantly said about politicians is that they don't lead in educating whomever they're talking to. You know, I mean, a part of your district is in Kingwood. I am pretty sure – Kingwood has on Lake Houston Boulevard. There are several companies that have that would throw oil that change oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who controls whether they throw the oil down into the sewer or not?
Various state agencies, and then the EPA ultimately that has jurisdiction. Right.
So it seems to me that it is interesting that nobody that I really don't see the argument being made or the narrative being made that to the EPA, because folks in Kingwood are very concerned about the environment.
Right. Water in Texas with fracking as well. That's one of the huge issues. And drought after drought, managing our water resources is as significant as any other issue.
Absolutely. Steve Brown has just released a new policy. He's running for the State Railroad
yep.
Commission. And he released a new draft where he's talking about using waste or recycled water in fracking and not using fresh water. So I think these are the kinds of things that people are going to want to hear. Whether it wins elections, I actually think we underestimate the population quite a bit. That you wanted to say?
Yeah, to jump ahead with that, one of the issues I'm running on, which I've talked about previously when I was on the show, and I'd like to again, is I want to bring together online, create a website, accountability.gov, which would bring together all government customer service, which highly relates to that. So if you see a company, right, let's say, you know, you don't think they're handling their oil properly, or you have evidence, in fact, that they are
right.
violating a statute, environmental statute, and, you know, it's running into the freshwater reservoir or something like that. How easy would it be for you, a regular citizen without a legal team, to get that corporation to own up to its responsibilities to following the law? I mean, what do? Do you call 911? I mean, the Kingwood police don't have, you know, jurisdiction over that. So what my idea would be, which I think appeals is makes imminent sense, and we'll get there eventually, will be if you have an issue with, you know, EPA, let's say, not necessarily regulating this company, or you think this company isn't, you would be able to go online and you, on a digital map, you would point it out and say, this company here, I think the EPA should have extra scrutiny here because I don't think it's following its statutes. So every citizen could actually help. And then also if you have, you know, an issue with your Social Security tax, all of those government customer services to be brought in one place.
That was actually a pretty detailed document that you wrote on that. And, you know, I think anybody who looks at it, of course, you know, it has to go through the 400 and how many?
35
yeah. different members of Congress. Folks, we're speaking to Nico Letsos. He's a Democratic candidate for the 2nd Congressional District in Houston. It covers Kingwood. It covers parts of Montrose. Where else does it cover?
West University, Spring Branch, Katy, Cy Fair, Spring, Klein. It's super gerrymandered.
It's a gerrymandered district, but it doesn't mean it's not a district that belongs to us all. Folks, this
Absolutely.
Is KPFT. You can reach us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, and Roxy loves to say it this way, which is...
713-JAM-KPFT.
And folks, remember, give us a call. Do you have a question for Nico Letsos? This is a call-in show. And look, a lot of times we talk about government not working. And the piece that I read before spoke about how we are actually manipulated by the plutocracy and how it's actually done. The way to get around that, of course, is always to make sure that you participate in the system. Look, Terry, do you have anything that you want to ask Nico specifically?
No, I'm listening.
Yeah. Anyway, Nico, continuing with back to the Chronicle, the information. So far, we have a change of stance pretty much on immigration. We have a change of stance on bipartisanship. What other things did you notice that you think the audience should know that, given that you're not going to get a debate or you're unable to get a debate, the only way that folks can communicate is for independent hosts, I imagine, to get you or Ted Poe separately to come and, you know, say what they need to say for the people to be able to make an intelligent choice.
Right. One thing that really stuck out to me was I did bring up gerrymandering, which we just talked about with the district. So, you know, in 2012, it was Super Bowl Sunday when it actually came out. Districts all over the state were redrawn, more basically to maximize the number of Republicans that were elected, and then to really put all the Democrats together to minimize them. So what you have is districts like the 2nd, which is about a 60%, 40% Republican-Democrat split, and then you have Democratic districts that are basically 100% Democratic, kind of like Sheila Jackson Lee's. So I brought this up, and the need, Justice Stevens released a book called, he's retired now, Six Amendments, one of which was a constitutional amendment to end gerrymandering, replace it with centralized districts. Number of people, retired Senator Dodd, others have spoken out about this, how this is sort of a behind-the-scenes issue that is really causing gridlock and just terrible results in our democracy. So I brought this up. And what Mr. Poe said after that was, I have no responsibility in this issue. This isn't in my... You know, I have no control over this in Congress. The state draws that up. And that is inexcusable. This is an issue that matters to us all. Whether or not he can pass a law to end it is irrelevant. I mean, you have, you know, to borrow a phrase from the president's office, in Congress, you also have access to the bully pulpit. When you talk about things, they can catch on. And the fact that he hasn't said anything about gerrymandering or making sure districts are fair and stable... By the way, they're probably going to redraw the lines again next year because what they did in 2012 was most likely going to be deemed illegal. So they're going to have to do it again. This is just unstable. And you get people like, you know, Poe and others who think you don't have to debate, you know, their opponent. Mm-hmm. You don't have to debate me because they're going to get reelected no matter what they do. For a long time, I want to say, because this is hysterical to me, his website, if you went on, and this he actually updated about a week after we had the Chronicle meeting, but all through May, June, July, his website was down. He didn't even make a case to you why he deserved re-election.
His website was down?
You went to tedpoe.com and it was under maintenance, although you could still donate money if you wanted. So, yeah, and I brought that up to him, you know, And the thing, he had no answer to gerrymandering. I mean, why would he? He's benefited enormously from this. I mean, you know, 4 years ago, no one even ran against him. He just had a libertarian opponent and ran away with 90% of the vote.
Right. Well, I think it's important, Nico, that I think we have to stop taking folks for granted. Now, let's go to Spring. Dylan?
Yes.
Dylan, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys?
Excellent. You have a question for Nico?
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
So I'm a college student in Spring, and I attend Lone Star College, Montgomery. And I was wondering how, as a college student, I can get involved in this campaign for Nico. I don't know if you've already answered that question or not, but I was just curious to know what resources young people in his district have to elect him.
Thanks. Thanks for the question. On my website, nicoletsos.com, N-I-K-O-L-E-T-S-O-S.com, and if you Google Democrat 2nd District 2014, I'll come up. You can contact me, and I have other volunteers as well. As a Democrat in the state, also Battleground Texas is an excellent organization that gets, you know, that kind of pulls resources for, you know, many candidates. So, phone banking, block walking, that sort of thing. So if you, you know, use the form on my website, contact me, I'll put you on a list. And, it'd be great. I mean, every person I have helps, and, you know, it's an uphill battle. And I like to call it a David and Goliath battle because David won.
That right. is so true. Yeah. I mean,
there you go.
Do you have any other questions that you want to ask Nico, Dylan?
No, I mean, I am working or volunteering with Battleground Texas. Is this something that is helping to get you elected, or?
Well, one of Battleground's main priorities is Wendy Davis, of course, but with that comes voting straight ticket. When you look at the Republican Party today, I mean, there's such a lack of ideas or any policy to get our democracy working again and moving forward. So, I mean, you know, just the fact that voting Democratic straight ticket does help. But as far as my campaign specifically in the 2nd District, they are helping. They have, you know, various filled offices in every part. They just opened one in Spring Branch. Please do contact me directly. So, we can have more specific efforts for my campaign.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I want to say whether or not the gentleman's still on the line.
He's still on the line.
Okay, great. To address, you know, college costs, I mean, they're escalating. When you look at the American economy as a whole, there are two things that stand out that have increased cost-wise more than inflation, far, far more than inflation: higher education and healthcare. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, what do those two things have in common? Well, they receive massive government subsidies. And this goes directly to what your piece was on,
right,
about the plutocracy.
Yes.
And this is another place where they fleece the government. Instead of these subsidies lowering costs or stabilizing costs, what do? They increase the profit margins for medical companies, pharmaceutical companies and their patents, universities that are building football stadiums and selling jerseys instead of passing on the savings for lower tuition. And to go back to Ted Poe, you look at his record, there is no oversight of him calling out a pharmaceutical company and saying, what have you done with the tens of billions of dollars we have given you to make pharmaceuticals more affordable for the elderly? I mean, nothing. There is absolutely nothing that, you know, Congress has done to this effort.
The reality, Dylan, was that good, the information you needed?
Yeah, that was great.
Thank you very much for calling, Dylan. Now, Nico, this is where we talk about here all the time, and that is getting people really engaged into the body politic. Because you just made a statement. You just said, you made a blanket statement. The Republican Party is out of ideas. That's what you said. Okay?
They're running on empty. I mean, they're running on what Ronald Reagan ran on for a country that's changed tremendously, right?
Exactly. Now, I don't think the American population's dumb. I think the American population need somebody to, or need folk to, I don't want to sound condescending and saying to teach them, but I think what I'd like to say is that to make them aware of realities they are not currently getting. So it seems to me that what folks like yourself that are considered severe underdogs have to do is get pretty, how should I say this? Innovative in the way you actually get your message out and do it. Because, I mean, I see it, to be frank, I see it easier, it being easier for Congress folks that are running in districts like Ted Poe's district than I see for, let's say, a senator or otherwise that has to cover both urban, rural, you know. So what are you doing? What are people in your area doing to get around that? Because I'll be honest with you, okay, for folks like that are doing blogging, folks that are doing these types of community radios, I think they are the future of communication for every party, okay? But they have to be used, and they have to be used wisely.
Right. I mean, the democratization of, you know, the media is going to continue, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, the market share right now is dominated by, you know, the traditional media, 5 o'clock, 9 o'clock news. And, you know, you were talking about earlier about, you know, the American public isn't aware of what's going on. When you look at these programs, one of the main issue is they can go, even the Houston Chronicle, major publications, they can go months, if not years, without a substantial investigation or story about what your congressman is up to. I mean, I've been watching the local news since I've been running to be better in tune with you know, I did before as well, but I'm doing it, you know, more consistently now to make a point of it since I'm going to be representing the area. And there's hardly any story about what your congressman is up to in D.C. I mean, if there was an actual focus on the day-to-day operation or just a weekly report, weekly report, what is Congressman Poe doing? What is Congressman Culberson doing? What is Congresswoman Jackson doing? Right? If we even had that access and that coverage, it would be a tremendous help because we would pressure them to actually do something.
Right.
Because right now, what is the main concern of a politician? It's getting reelected. How do you get reelected? Raise money. And how do you do that? The plutocracy. Serve special interests. I calculated in a piece I wrote that the average congressman in 2012 raised $13,000 per week. Basically, I mean, that's what you average. And if you didn't, you're dead in the water.
Right.
I mean, think about that. That's all consuming. I mean, that's what you do every day. You wake up, it's money. And that's inexcusable. And to plug my website, you're talking about, you know, being innovative. And I hope what I've outlined on my website as one of my centerpiece legislation is called the Accountability and Transparency Act. And I hope that would address it because one of the things I would do, besides centralizing customer service, which I already talked about with that, would be you would get your a detailed daily schedule of what your congressman is up to, you know, the day after for security purposes. So basically, if you're a worker, you tell your supervisor what you're up to. Who's our congressman's supervisor? Us, the American people. And we don't know what they're up to, you know, most of the time because they're just raising money. And a lot of those fundraisers are actually behind closed doors.
So. That is sad. Now, I think that is important, but again, I want to go back to how many people are in your district?
Every congressional district has about 800,000,
but,
you know, that includes children, so about 650,000 voters, registered voters, about 500,000.
Okay, you divide that. How do you make contact with the people in your district right now other than block walk-in or phone banking?
Well, to be an underdog right now in 2014 actually has a lot of advantages. You can reach more people on, you know, the internet, Facebook, social media, easier than you ever could. So, you know, taking out ads online that's targeted towards people in your district, which you can do on Facebook. Here on Pacifica, I believe this is my third appearance. Shows like that.
You were in Mike Honig's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, I think it is important that all candidates do shows, but I mean, let me be frank. We try to get every single candidate of every persuasion here because we want to ask them the questions as far as why should you be elected or why do you think you're better than the other candidate? And, you know, that's one of the questions that we ask you. Why are you better than Ted Poe? Now, when the Chronicle comes out with let me give you a hunch and then you tell me how wrong I am.
Okay.
Or you tell me what is it, you know, if it's going to be any different. My hunch is, how old are you?
25.
My hunch is that the safe bet for the Chronicle will be to come out and say, list all the deficiencies that you stated for Ted Poe and claim for his past experience and level of maturity, that is the candidate that they are going to select. Tell me why that is an absolutely asinine thing for them to do.
Well, one of the things we'll probably say is, you know, you can't learn on the job in Congress, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll say something. And I, to that, I would say, yeah, you can't, because Ted Poe hasn't learned on the job either. And as far as experience goes, I mean, what experience? We talked about his record. I mean, they're not getting anything done. This guy in 2013 talked about immigration and said, we're going to do it right, and we're going to pass, you know, not one bill, one big bill, but we're going to pass separate bills to address it. They haven't done that. No one in their right mind could be proud of the work Congress is doing. And, you know, Ted Poe is the biggest talker in Congress, talks more than anyone else. There was an LA Times story I linked on my website where they actually had the word count and determined in 2012 for sure he was the biggest talker in Congress. I mean, this guy, like, what has he done for Houston? Like, tell me, you know, one thing that he has clearly stood up for on our behalf, or over his 10-year tenure, what has he necessarily improved the country on? Has he strengthened it? I mean, as far as the Tea Party goes, the fact that, you know, they held the debt ceiling hostage, they shut down the government, those things, the Peterson Foundation estimates that that cost 1 million jobs at a time when the economy is the most important issue. I mean, if you're going to ask a candidate, why are you better than someone else? Well, that needs to be in the framework of how are you going to improve the economy, because that's what matters the most to the American people, and rightfully so. And the fact that obstruction and government turbulence and gridlock is estimated to have prevented the creation of 1 million jobs, and Ted Poe is right at the center of that movement that has caused it, I mean, it's outrageous. And I want to make another point, by the way. I know you've been in Houston a very long time. I'm a native Houstonian, born and raised, proud to be here. I went to, you know, Europe recently for with my wife for a honeymoon, and came back and I loved it even more, truth be told. And I mean, I really think it's the greatest city in the world. I wouldn't be anywhere else. But for us to send, you know, this city, by the way, strongest economy in the world, the energy capital of the world, the medical capital of the world, you know, great education, city on the rise. And for us to be represented in D.C. by the biggest talker, that amounts to nothing. I mean, as Houstonians, we deserve better than that. The second district deserves better than that. They deserve to have someone that will go to D.C. with the resourceful work ethic and the creativity that has made the state and this city great. And Ted Poe's not delivering.
I mean, it is important that folks are able to make their case. Now, you are elected on November 4th?
Yep, November 4th. Uh-huh.
November 4th.
With early voting and mail-in voting before that, as you know.
Right. You are elected on November 4th. What's the first thing that you're going to do?
When I'm in office or, like, on November 4th?
On November 4th, you're elected. What do you do?
Huh. I would probably reach out to various congressmen immediately and start working to get support for the Accountability and Transparency Act. I wholeheartedly believe that would get our democracy working again. I've actually, you know, envisioned. I'm truth be told, I'm a pretty stoic guy. You know, my wife and I, we buy each other books for Christmas and, you know, our birthday. So if I had a campaign party, what I would probably do is I would buy everyone a great book that I think they should read.
And what would that book be?
Oh, I don't know. I really actually like a recent book by Steven Pinker. He's a Harvard psychologist, called The Better Angels of Our Nature, mm-hmm. How Violence Has Declined. It's a very optimistic work.
Right.
Because, I mean, we get bogged down in a lot of negativity, and it talks about how we've improved. So, I mean, yeah, that would be one of them.
Of course, anyways, I would have hoped that you would have said Piketty's book, but it's okay.
Oh, Piketty's in the Strand as well, but I don't know how readable that is.
It is actually a big book, and I haven't read it yet, but it's on my... Actually, I think I bought it, and it may actually be in my pad here, but haven't looked at it yet.
But that's jumping ahead very much.
Yes, I think what is important, Nico, is when you have a young candidate, and many young candidates have actually won, mm-hmm. as you're well aware of, right. is the voters in your district must have a confidence level that you know what you're talking about. You said I've been out here several times. I think one of the reasons you've been out here several times is people have been able to see the intellect in the things that you come out with, which I think it's important. What I've found, and I think many have found, is in Congress there isn't that, and this is not to sound snobbish by any means, but the lack of intellect that we now have in Congress is directly proportional to
the results
that we're getting. When we have a Bachman in Congress, and we can go over and over to all, and I won't mention our district because this is our district in Texas, and as a and somebody that shouldn't quite say certain things, this is for you to go out and say. But it saddens me that the most powerful country in the world is represented by, you know, there was a time when politicians tried not to look too smart, and it wasn't because it was simply so that they would feel a level of a certain level to be able to communicate with a population that felt comfortable in communicating with them.
Right, but now it's become just anti-intellectual, anti-right.
Exactly. Knowledge. Now we are in a state of anti-intellectualism. And it has actually reached a dangerous level. And I think it's going to take leadership. And I think it's going to take youth.
It's going to take, I mean, yeah, we need to boldly call it for what it is. I mean, the fact that in the face of evidence that, for example, unlimited tax cuts do not improve growth. Like the Ryan budget is based on assumptions the economics discipline has completely thrown out universally. And the fact that, you know, tax rises are completely anathema to them, that they don't even consider them because they're just so sure, you know, it's not going to result in anything. Yeah, that's outrageous. And you know, to the point you were saying, it's very difficult to convince voters in this stage because they haven't heard it in a very long time for a candidate to be proposing ideas. They're not used to that. Both parties, and you look at candidates, I mean, when they're speaking, they kind of, you know, take an issue and make it very simplistic and black and white, and the other side's completely wrong and we're completely right.
Right.
No issue is ever going to work like that. You don't necessarily need intellectuals or geniuses in Congress, but what you need is someone that can be considerate and curious and also admit when they were wrong. I mean, we're dealing with the most complex times in human history. I mean, something pops up in Iraq, and one month President Obama's calling it the junior team, and the other month he's calling it, you know, the end of our country if we don't address it, more or less, right? And I mean, this is what this is a function of, is the complexity of the issues we're dealing with, and globalization and all this. So we need people to go in open-mindedly, and what we're really seeing isn't as much just being anti-intellectual, but what we have right now is a very ruthless class because it's driven all by money. Because, I mean, they basically view themselves, if they're not raising that $13,000 a week, they're just, you know, dead in the water because their opponent will, or their special interest buddies will have someone, you know, challenge them in their primary. And yeah, all that goes together, and it makes new ideas very, you know, you don't hear Ted Poe or anyone else necessarily proposing new ideas to fix our democracy. It's the same old arguments recycled.
I tell folks all the time that I, you know, I do a lot of my work, you know, writing and otherwise inside of, you know, Starbucks. I'll stay there for hours and just research and write and read and write. And I always have folks come in there. And, you know, living in Kingwood, which is a mostly Republican area, I talk to a whole lot of people. I talk to mostly Republicans. And I tell you something, we have some quite interesting conversations. And for the people that go out there, I find that many of them are actually willing to listen on a one-on-one basis. I think once folks realize that it is not that no one is asking anyone to change their values, their moralities, or anything like that, but just to make an intelligent choice, an informed choice when they're looking at candidates. I think people are now becoming receptive to that message if there are candidates out there that give them that wiggle room, if you will. In other words, that candidate that tells them necessarily, I am not asking you to drop who you are. I'm not asking you to drop your party. I'm just asking you for your vote for this election because I'm going to do what's necessary for you.
What's common sense, what everyone acknowledges. Like I said earlier, I mean, no one's going to come out here and say we're in great shape. Congress is doing a wonderful job. I mean, 90% of Americans disapprove of the job Congress is doing, and who's the 10% that approve of them? Statistical error and the lobbyists themselves, right?
I mean, I like that one, yeah. Statistical error. What is a statistical error? Maybe 5%
yeah,
or so.
Right. I mean, and their families, right?
Right.
I mean, who else? You know, I mean, we're just in a rut. A statistic that I think, you know, kind of summarizes a lot of what the angst we're feeling right now is from George Washington to So someone born in 1970, every generation in America was better off than the one that came before, you know, materially at least.
Right.
There was economic growth. My generation is projected to be the first one that hasn't been better off than all the ones that came before. I mean, that's a huge change for us to be based on a country of improvement and progress.
But that opens another window for folks who are talking that, right? In other words, the amount of our population that are reaching voting age, included in your district, it's growing rapidly.
Yeah, Harris County is growing rapidly.
Exactly.
Too,
and the thing about it is, that's one of the things I don't find candidates on any side talking about. You know, there was a time that that's all many of us wrote about, and that is the income disparity. Not only income disparity, but wealth disparity, which is very, very an important facet. And that statement that you just made there about the next generation not being as well off as the past generation, that is specifically caused by policy. There are papers that's been written that, you know, written some of them that showed, let's give an example, encouraging my generation, the baby boom generation, that have built equity in homes to create, to have these policies, what is it called, reverse mortgages, a wealth extractor. Look, there are good reasons why some people may have to have these types of plans or policies or whatever, but when it becomes the modus operandi, it becomes a problem. It looks like we have a caller, so before I even ask you to answer that, let's go to Wayne.
Come on, Wayne. Go ahead.
How you doing, Wayne?
Hey, good afternoon, Egberto. Hey, this is a good conversation y'all having. But I would like to ask the young man right now, and he's doing some good talking, and he needs to keep it up, keep doing it. But I would like to ask him right now, I got three questions for him.
Go for it. Shoot it off.
All right.
How does he feel about a livable wage in Texas, the minimum wage? Should it be raised or lowered? I mean, raised and
indexed.
I don't vote for anybody that stands for anything against the EPA because our air quality should be and always should be the first thing on everybody's mind.
Absolutely.
Because we live here. So when ask him those three questions, give him those three questions.
Yes, he has it for you, Wayne. I appreciate it, my friend.
Okay.
I'll answer them from the newest going backwards. So air quality, I mean, ask people in China that have lung cancer. You know, lung cancer is exploding exponentially there because they have terrible air quality. Yeah, air quality is very important. And not only that, but, you know, just regulating toxics in the environment as well. So, yeah, I'm for the EPA, and for it to be managed wisely. When conservatives talk about, oh, you know, the EPA is killing business, it's not killing big business, but in some instances, if it's hurting small business, then it should be calibrated so it's appropriate only for small business. But that's a very small issue. As far as the minimum wage, I'm fully in support of the minimum wage and for it to be indexed to inflation. If you look at the golden age of the American economy in the 1960s and 1950s, when the minimum wage was first introduced, in today's terms, that would be about $15, $16 an hour. If we could live with that rate in the 1950s and 60s when our economy was booming, we can surely live with it now. And other advanced economies have a minimum wage that is about two times ours as well. I'm not in favor of necessarily $15 an hour automatically because that might be too traumatic a jump, but for sure raising it to the about $10 an hour they're proposing and then afterwards escalating it to where about in 10 years it can be to that level and then afterwards to be indexed to inflation so increases automatically. Social Security payments go up for the elderly. Why shouldn't our you know, workers also have their minimum wage increase? On that note, I also want to say something, a statistic I came across. If you're working at Walmart full-time, you still have to get government assistance just to pay your bills. I mean, that's shooting ourselves in the foot.
It's actually a transfer of wealth.
Right. Your first question dealt with a livable wage, and that's exactly what it is. If you're working full-time in this country, at Walmart, wherever it is, I mean, if you're working full-time in this country, you're doing honorable work. You should be proud. You're a positive member of society, contributing, paying taxes, having a great service. You shouldn't need, you know, food stamps just to get by. You shouldn't need your students to be on reduced lunch. You should be able to make enough money to you know, cover those things. And what Egberto was talking about before the gentleman called in, he was talking about the plutocracy and, you know, not being able to make enough money. And I want to bring up Thomas Piketty's argument where he talked about this. He said when you have such inequality and, you know, one generation is going to be worse off than the other, what that leads to is people on the bottom that can't make a livable wage. What do? They spread themselves thin. They get credit cards. They get subprime mortgages. And then that hurts everyone. Even if you're a billionaire, you were hurt by the recession. And that recession was caused by the very inequality these issues are allowing. So it's not even benefit. Like if the billionaires like got together and decided on these policies, they're idiots because they're part of this country and the recession hurt them as well.
To put it simply. You're absolutely right, Nico. Wayne, look, thank you very much for the call.
Hold on. I got one more question for the young man. I want to put him on the spot.
Quick, sir.
I don't vote for Ted Poe, so that's never going to be an issue.
Okay.
Right now, if he was elected on November the 4th, would he support a livable wage right now? Say it to the people. You call yourself a Democrat? Say it to the people.
Can you define livable wage specifically?
You said $15. I think it should be $17, but I will go along with $15. I will accept that because it's double the minimum wage. I don't think that it should be held up.
Thanks.
I think that it should be done right away.
Thank you, Wayne. Wayne, I got to go because we're in a tight thing, but thank you.
Okay.
He'll answer, my dear friend. Thanks. You can. Okay. Look, folks, let me tell you one thing. Please remember that this is a call-in show. So the next time, I hope to hear from a little bit more people. We brought Nico here to really get some information. But Nico, real quickly, tell them what a livable wage means to you so that you can address Wayne real quickly.
Livable wage to me means an amount where, like I was getting at, where you can get by, pay your healthcare bills, save for college, you know, have a fighting chance at being in the middle class and having stability, not having to, you know, apply for subprime mortgages, credit cards just to pay your bills.
Now, Nico also mentioned the Piketty book and an important statement, and we need to definitely get this out real quickly. Folks, you cannot have a viable economy with people only at the top spending. It's a mathematical impossibility. So therefore, read that book. Read the Piketty book. But anyhow, folks, this is Politics Done Right. Nico, you want to say something real quick?
I just wanted to thank you. It was really fun talking to y'all and everyone that called in. Thank you as well.
Thank you very much for being here. We had Nico Letsas from the second Congressional District running as a Democrat. Terry, real closer, quickly.
Ted Poe is a dude should be sued by Massengill for patent infringement. I hope he doesn't make it. And anyone who calls Nathan Bedford Forrest a hero should be burned out of Congress on the sheet that he's wearing.
Wow, that was tough, Terry. Hey, look, thank you for always being here and being a part of the conversation, Terry.
You're welcome.
You take care, my friend. Folks, this is Politics Done Right. Thank you very much for spending some time with me again. Next week, we are going to have Mike Collier, who is running for Texas
Comptroller.
Comptroller. Right. I always say that wrong. Texas Comptroller. And we will also have...
Sam Houston.
I'm going getting old. So, folks, remember to call in tomorrow and listen to those folks. And with that, Politics Done Right is out.
Thank you very much for listening to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Williams. You can personally reach me by sending an email to egberto@politicsdoneright.com. Remember, Egberto is spelled EGBERTO. Change starts with you. 90.1 KPFT gives you information not tainted by corporate interest. Please visit kpft.org and contribute. Let's ensure continued access to real information and news remain available to all. Again, thank you very much for listening to Politics Done Right.